welcome to On the Record with Furniture Today, a podcast that goes behind the headlines to look at the news and the newsmakers, the people and the personalities that give the furniture industry its unique flavor. I'm your host, Bill McLaughlin, Editor-in-Chief of Furniture Today.
Hey, I'm Trisha Yearwood, here in Hollywood at the legendary Capitol Studios. If you're in High Point for the furniture market, be sure to stop by Klausner Home Furnishings, your one-stop shopping destination for everything furniture, including Nashville, the latest addition to my Trisha Yearwood home collection. You'll find something for every room, all of it inspired by my love of home, family, and friends, and what I call a recipe for comfortable living.
Come see the entire collection at Klausner, 101 North Hamilton.
To this week's edition of On the Record. I'm Bill McLaughlin with Furniture Today. If you'd like to subscribe to this podcast, please feel free to do so on your favorite platform, iTunes, Podbeam, Spotify. We are on all of those. Please subscribe and you will get notifications every time we have exciting new guests. This week, I'm here with Jason Oliver Nixon and Jonathan Leckie of Madcap Cottage, and we're in a brand new place, right? It's only since October you've been in this new space.
Yeah, Bill, welcome to our new studio. This is the new Madcap Cottage HQ in the heart of booming Thomasville, North Carolina.
Yeah, people can't, there's one thing about a podcast, you can't get a feel for the space. It's a really, really fun space.
A lot of color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the ideas behind the space was to really tell our brand story and to really showcase the product that we have out there in the market. So it's wallpapered within an inch of its life, I would say. And, you know, we have...
The dogs are scampering about. You'll probably hear them at some point. But I think it's a fun place, and I think that it's, first and foremost, it's our studio. It's very much a working space, a well-thought-out working space, but it's a place where we see in the next couple of months, the next year, that it starts becoming an activation where we can host conferences, where we can bring people in, we can have events at market. But very much that kind of living, breathing space where it works beautifully, but then it also has kind of corollary components to it so that people can really experience the Madcap lifestyle
brand.
Yeah, I think
that was really the sort of impetus for us to move here and to do this, was to really create a space that told the brand story and to really be able to showcase that, because I think we are such a visual brand that we really needed something that told
Let's talk about the brand story, because your brand is popping up more and more places. I think just in the last year or two, you've added a number of new licensees. And as we were talking about the podcast, you have visions beyond just furnishings.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that we are a lifestyle brand, and that's always been our goal, that we wanted it to be sticky on many, many channels and many places. And I think, you know, currently we're more in home, but I think in the next year or two, we could definitely see ourselves going into a hotel space, going into commercial spaces with our licensed product. We have some feelers out there for some fashion and accessories partnerships, so some co-branded opportunities, but also very much a global space where, you know, America is such a big and important market, but also saying slice and dice the pie, and what kind of presence can you have in Asia, you know, Japan, some of those, India, some of those other countries around the world that have booming economies, and how can you tap those economies where Japan is, you know, crazy for prints and patterns. So let's really go after that space and say, how can we create something with a department store in Tokyo?
Yeah, I mean, I think our vision is bigger than just the U.S. And I think we've always been really good about getting press opportunities in our countries, in the U.K., in China, in Australia, in all of these other places
Russia,
around the world.
Russia, we get a lot of press in Russia.
Places that really have an affinity for prints and pattern. And
we're almost more English than the English at this point. So I think that that kind of modern American sensibility paired with kind of an Anglophile vibe is very appealing. And I think that, you know, as you watch economies change, the first time we went to Russia, it was still very glitz and glam. And then a couple years later, it was much more sophisticated. They had really evolved. And I think if you look at the Chinese market, you know, they've had a very modern moment. But then England is, you know, very much a reference point for the Chinese, and, the, you know, they're buying houses in England and sending their kids to school. So I think that, you know, that sensibility is something that we can, and maximalism is having such a moment right now. You're really seeing that. And we definitely have maximalist tendencies.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've always had maximalist tendencies. I don't think we are just jumping on what the latest trend is. It just so happens that that trend
has caught up with us.
And you're seeing it in, you know, I mean, when Pottery Barn's doing things with Lily Pulitzer, and you're seeing patterns show up in other, you know, in the Ballard catalog.
Or CB2's, you know, one of their recent Instagram campaigns was Find Your Prints and Pattern Personality. I mean, you thought of CB2 5 years ago as being kind of strictly modern, gray, neutrals. And, you know, a throw pillow with a stripe on it was kind of,
study
oh my
and
gosh,
taupe.
Yeah. Yeah, study and taupe, exactly.
Yeah,
so.
I think it's, you know, so I think we're headed in the right direction.
How do you, you talked about getting all of these press opportunities around the world. I mean, both of you have an editorial background. Is that intentional? Is that organic? How do those kinds of things come about?
Well, I think that we're storytellers, and I think that, you know, like you, that we can tell a story on many different platforms and many different channels. And I think that when we, you know, we really train ourselves in magazines to produce style, edit stories, and to create engagement, whether you're reading a story from or magazine from the front or the back or vice versa. And I think that we really learned how to create marketing opportunities. I was the editor-in-chief of Gotham and Hamptons and some other niche media magazines, and I didn't have any money to spend, and this is before social media. So I had to create opportunities that I would make sure that media buyers would come and buy ads, and I wanted Hermes and Gucci and Chanel in my book. So I would say, you know, to the celebrities on my cover, we would love to have you on the cover, but you have to come to a party and you have to stay for at least half an hour. So it was about creating engagement, and then the media buyers would walk away and say, oh my gosh, I just met whoever that was. And I think that, you know, for us taking those skills now to the interior space or the lifestyle space, it's just creating really, our contacts are really such a part of our value. And the marketing that we can bring is really such a part of our value. And I think we just love meeting people. And that, but if we're going to, in a new country, really reaching out through Instagram and, mm-hmm. and meeting and greeting and building those relationships and building those bridges. And you never know, you don't ask, you don't get. So I think that for us, you know, we develop a licensed program with somebody, it's not just about creating a great product that John paints and sketches, but it's also what are the marketing arms that we can help bring to the table. So it's not just a, here are some designs or make it yellow, but it's an actual program. And we love creating programs that really make sense from point of design to point of sale and everything in between.
And I think we also look to create programs that play across different manufacturers so that we are really creating a lifestyle experience. So all of our rugs that we just launched with Momeni this past fall tie back into our fabric patterns for Robert Allen.
Tie back into our lighting and
accessories. So you have this,
and then you can buy the, then you'll be able to buy the shoe with the same pattern on it. And so I think it's that idea of saying it's a little bit like Laura Ashley back in the day, where you could go in, you could get a dress, you could get fabric, and you could get a lampshade, and you could do that in Tampa, Florida. You can do that in Des Moines, Iowa. And so I think it's that idea of saying, hey, how can we deliver content that you may not buy bedding but once a year, but I can go in and get the amazing tote bag, or I can get the wonderful accessory that's going to make my outfit look great, or the pillow, and to deliver those tools and give the consumer the opportunity to say, hey, we're making it easy to show you how to mix and match. All of our greens play together. All of our blues play together. So, you know, we're kids of the 1970s, so we really kind of operate very much on that Garanimals model of 1 + 2 = 3, and we can show you how to do it in a way that's more advanced, where it doesn't have to be, you know, a gravy taupe story, but can be really fun. And you can give, we're going to give you the permission and the opportunity and the fun to really embrace your own brand personality and not our brand personality.
You know, well, I think, right, and I think one of the things that's been interesting with social media is seeing how people have taken products that we've created but made them their own. And that's always been the goal with the product that we create, is that, you know, while we are Madcap Cottage and there's a certain, you know, you can probably look at certain things we've done and know instantly that it's us, people have taken that and turned it into how they tell their story, and that's really been the goal.
Yeah, because everything we do, we want it to be timeless. We don't, if you know, I think the worst thing you could say is we're trendy. You know, we always want to be on trend, but we don't want, we want to create fabrics, we want to create product, we want to create experiences that are timeless, so that 5 years from now, you can't tag something to a specific year. You can walk into a kitchen and it has granite countertops and nickel hardware and stainless steel appliances, and I can tell you that's not neither here nor there, but I can tell you pretty much what year that kitchen was designed. Mm-hmm. You know, and so a good, you know, I would go back in and maybe put brass knobs, and then all of a sudden the kitchen would be timeless. So I think that for us, it's about creating wallpapers, it's about creating fabrics that are tapping the zeitgeist, but you can't say, oh my gosh, I saw that on the cover of that magazine and it's been overplayed. It's really much giving you the tools to take that experience and run with it and have some fun.
That was such an editor's word, zeitgeist. No.
My SAT knowledge comes in use every once in a while, Bill.
Yeah, I used that once in a story. My editor struck it right out. He's like, who are you writing for?
Fancy zeitgeist. German words.
Right. For those of you who are listening, Google it. And by the way, Garanimals, if you're under 35, Garanimals was a clothing line that was kind of pre-designed and pre-matched for you, put everything together.
That's right.
Let's go back to the very, very beginning. Where did Madcap Cottage come from? In other words, how did the two of you start the idea? What was the process like when you sat down and you said, we're going to start a business and we're going to call it, Crazy Quilt. No, that doesn't work. We're going to call it, you know, what was that inception moment like?
Well, I think John had started the firm a couple of years earlier and it was working under his name.
And it was really an interior design business. But while it was an interior design business, my background is really in fine art. And so I had always wanted to design my own fabric and design my own wallpaper. And I think in some ways, the interior design business was sort of perhaps how I saw getting to the point where I would design my own product. But I didn't have, I don't think when we first started it, we had an idea that we would end up where we are today.
Yeah, but I think that the idea, we sat down one weekend and thought about, okay, you know, it's not, we don't want people buying us, we want people buying a brand. And we want a brand that is sophisticated, but is fun, is spirited, is whimsical. And we started tossing some ideas out there. And we realized that, gee, we really like kind of that idea of the cottage, that it's kind of a state of mind. It could be an urban cottage, it could be an English cottage, but it feels kind of intimate. I mean, a cottage can be a Newport cottage, obviously, that's huge.
Right.
But just that idea of it feels cozy, it feels very inviting. And then we wanted to pair that with something that we're very much students of, the anti-MAME school, in that movie, When We're Having a Bad Day, we watch it, and her, you know, this kind of very forward-thinking movie made in, you know, the 1950s, and her decor changes, and she's kind of open to experience, and that kind of madcap sensibility of madcap is kind of a very throwback word of the idea you're scampering down Fifth Avenue and then you jump into a fountain and then you keep going and you go with a martini in hand. So we like that mix of madcap and cottage coming together because I think it's an invitation to fun, it's an invitation to join the party, and that's really very much a mandate of who we are, and that you know, every day isn't fun and every day isn't glamorous, but that idea that we're bringing you into the mix, and it's a very accessible, approachable mix. It's not an ivory tower.
Right, and I think that the accessible and approachable was very key to moving it kind of to where we are today. And in that, you know, as an interior design business, A, it's a very hard business to scale. B, it's a very limited business because there are only so many people out there who can afford to pay what you need to charge to make it a money-making business. So you're not impacting people's lives in the way that we really wanted to, in the way that we really felt, you know, we could help people make their living spaces more enjoyable, more fun, and more personable. And so I think that's kind of where we pivoted to this idea of, you know, well, while interior design is part of the business still, it's not the only part of the business.
No, and it's not even the largest part of the business anymore. And I think that that idea of always giving people, whether it's almost all of our product is retail available, but mm-hmm. it still makes you dream. and it still puts stars in your eyes and makes you feel special.
Because I think we also always question, you know, you go into these showrooms in the D&D building in New York and you would see these beautiful products and it was like, well, why can't that product be at a Pottery Barn? Why can't that product, you know, maybe it's not the exact same construction because the cost would be prohibitive, but like, why can't you have a beautifully patterned floral fabric at a retail store? Why does it have to be?
You know, I think for us, when Martha Stewart went to Kmart all those years ago, and you could pop into Kmart, and which I hadn't been into in a long time, and you know, I could get great towels for $8 and get a beautifully designed bathroom rug or those kind of things. And she really changed the face of American design. And I think that the consumer now is so savvy, and they really are, you know, as we saw food, you know, 30 years ago, nobody knew anything about wines and arugula and foie gras and watching that whole thing. I think that the consumer is becoming so savvy through because of many different things with design and watching that savviness. But that doesn't mean that they want to go pay the shopper that goes to Home Goods on Friday morning or Wednesday morning, whenever those deliveries happen. It doesn't mean that they can't afford Bergdorf Goodman. But they have a knowledge level, and they love that thrill of the hunt.
Right.
They love that idea of finding special. And I think that everything we do, while it's retail, it all feels very special. It feels unique. It feels hand-touched. It doesn't feel mechanical. It has wonderful details to it, very much surprise and delight moments, so that you can put stuff out in the marketplace that feels wonderful and feels magical, but is also retail. And so it's delivering those designer details in a different channel, a channel that's more available.
You also, your design sense seems to give consumers permission to do something that typically they would not do. I think most consumers are afraid, and speaking as someone who wrestles with design decisions in his own home, you take pattern and find spaces for it all over a room where a lot of times people are afraid of pattern or afraid to mix pattern or and you embrace it and really accentuate it and kind of give people permission to play.
And I think that that's always been a big part of what we've tried to do in the design space. And what we've found is that, you know, most of our interior design clients who have come to us over the years have been afraid of pattern and color. And it's really been how we worked with them to get them to see that, you know, bringing pattern and color into your home can really make your home that much more enjoyable and that much more fun and inviting. And it really tells a story.
But it's not our story.
But it's not ours.
It's your story. And so it's really getting inside our clients' heads or delivering product that makes people think. But saying, hey, you know what, we can take what you thought your brand story was for your home, and let's push it, and let's guide the conversation, because we're not talking at you, we're talking with you. And most of our clients have a certain perception of prints and pattern, and as we start kind of using our journalistic skills to drill down on what they're trying to capture with their home, it's a very different story, and they actually are open to prints and pattern. And it's kind of getting inside and kind of opening that, you know, unlocking the door. And they say, oh, now I understand it now. And with you guiding that dialogue and that conversation, or giving the consumer showing them how to use a fabric or showing them how to use a pillow, and then you can take a beige sofa and you make it look new and with throw pillows. So I think that for us, it's very much about, that we see ourselves as kind of educators. And we learn just as much from our clients and our consumers as they do from us. But we love that dialogue and the conversation. That's what we love about social tools like Instagram, because we can have that direct conversation with our consumers and really respond and really kind of plumb the marketplace a little bit and engage what they think, if it's going to work, if it's not going to work. But build that army of consumers out there that are passionate and excited about the brand. And that have then said, oh, you've changed my life. Because that's our goal in life, is to really, you know, to help make people's lives better through design. And if we can have some small impact on their life where they said, oh my gosh, my life is better as a result, and then mission accomplished.
Yeah.
Do you find that people come to you because they know what your style aesthetic is, what your brand is, and they want that? Or is it, I mean, how does that work? Do people say, yeah, I want that look in my house, and You know, they look you up and they look at your past portfolio and say, wow, look what they did here and there and there. So that they're coming to you already for the brand or the lifestyle look?
I think a lot of people are coming to us. I think that Instagram is our most important marketing tool. Mm-hmm. And I think that people are coming to us because they get a sensibility and a style. It's not necessarily a certain, you know, there have been certain rooms that have resonated for people. I think they're going to say, oh my gosh, I've, you know, I clipped that out years ago and I still have it. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, on Pinterest years ago.
Yeah, I love the kitchen in your New York cottage.
Yes, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have had people who have come to us specifically because they wanted what they saw, but we've also had people who have come to us and said, you know, I'm coming to you because I'm intrigued by this, but I don't know what it is that I'm intrigued about, really, or what I really, you know, help me figure this out, because I feel like I can do something more with my space. Then,
like a chair company came to us yesterday about creating a line of very specific chairs, but that had quite high volume, and they really like our spirit and sensibility. And so it's that's in that sense of fun that we're delivering on that promise.
Yeah.
So I think that sometimes yes, or, it's a mix of the visual, but it's a mix of they would like our story. And you know, we're telling a story through visuals and because we're writers, through words.
I think, you know, back in the day, Robert Allen came to us because
they came to us.
They basically felt like they had lost their way in the prints and pattern space, and they had become a company that was known primarily for their color library and basically solids and things like that. And they felt like they needed to get back into the prints and pattern world.
Money was being left on the table.
And they really, you know, felt like we understood that. And I think, you know, prints and pattern are our strength. I don't think...
But we've done very modern apartments.
Yeah.
Just as much as we've done kind of, a Georgian-style home, as much as we've just finished a very funky beach cottage, ranch-style 1950s home in Sarasota, Florida. So I think that it's, you know, if you're looking for one look, we're not that person. But it would be really kind of Bill getting inside of you and your wife's head and saying, hey, what's the story you're trying to convey? And how can we make you feel comfortable with prints and pattern? And it's going to really put a smile on your face every time you come in the house, and you're going to be able to put your feet up and relax, and your two dogs and the cat can sit there and it's okay.
It's very accessible. It doesn't feel...
Yeah, but it still makes you dream, as I had said. You know, I think it really makes you...
Well, yeah, and I think that's also where, you know, when we look at where our product is out there in the world, you know, our fabrics are available at Calico, which there are some designers who shop Calico, but it's primarily a consumer. And to see, you know, from photography that comes back to us from salespeople at Calico showing us what their clients have done with it, and to see how... You know, this consumer that if you looked at the retail landscape, you would think they have no interest in prints and pattern because, you know, your big retailers weren't showing it. But they really do. And they're using it in ways that, you know, they're not afraid to put it on a sofa.
They go more extreme than we do. You know, that Manor Born, which is the pug pattern that you had commented on earlier, you know, someone just did a whole room in it. Including the wallpaper. I love it, but I don't, you know, I'm thrilled, but I don't even know if I would have gone that far. It looks great, but, you know, it's really fun to see that people are really embracing prints, pattern, and color in a way that they're saying they don't want to look like Restoration Hardware. They don't want it to be beige and gray. You know, when we were at Nebraska Furniture Mart recently in Dallas, which we loved outside of north of Dallas, up near Frisco, it was great. They had a lot of, you know, lots of prints and pattern, and they had great service. And they had a mix of kind of, you know, higher end and mid-range, but prints and pattern everywhere. And great, you know, our rugs from Momeni are going to be there. And it was really great to see a really interesting, engaging retailer telling not only a great story, but it had the service. And it was buzzy, and it felt exciting, and it delivered on all the promises. And that's really how we like to align ourselves with companies that are thinking differently, are telling a different story, are engaging new audiences in ways that are not just kind of, we've always done it this way, so we will continue to do it this way. But let's really think out of the box and create some noise.
Where do you get your inspiration? Where do you get, I mean, how do you follow style trend? Where do you look for that?
I don't,
do you decide when
I'm
it's
hoping
time to
Thomasville
color?
Will become, no, I'm kidding.
I think we spend a lot of time, I think from a interiors point of view, we spend a lot of time studying the history of design and looking at great English country houses from the past.
For those of you who are not here, we're sitting in front of a wall-to-wall bookcase filled with design books.
Yes. Gardens, landscapes, like, interiors, you know, English.
Right. We spend a lot of time in museums looking at things in the V&A or, you know.
We were just in Cleveland. We were just in Philadelphia.
I think that that's a big part of it. I think we tend to look at, when it comes to trends, I guess I would say, we tend to look at things that are trending not in the home space. So we look at fashion. We look at other lifestyle areas. And what's kind of been interesting is that when we launched our fabric line with Robert Allen, we had decided that we wanted to do some florals, and we wanted to do, one of the florals we wanted to do was geraniums. And we had started that process 6 months before geranium started showing up
all over Gucci,
and it was kind of like,
and our inspiration was actually the unwatered section at Home Depot, where there are all these plants every summer that they forget to water, so they put them in one area, and we were like, gosh, geraniums need some love, and they're a classic flower, but that was really walking through Home Depot that day. We're like, let's do something with geraniums, because I don't feel like they're being represented in the marketplace.
And then, you know,
six months later, there are $3,200 handbags from Gucci out there. Very similar pattern. So that idea, again, of being on trend, and then Gucci coming out with, you know, crazy wallpapers. And we're saying, okay, there's something's coming. It's coming.
You know, I think we tend to look at what we would want for ourselves in the marketplace. So for another example of that is, you know, the first collection we did with Robert Allen, we put an emphasis on working yellow into that collection. Well, now you're starting to see yellow. I mean, we were a little bit ahead of that, but it's in fashion. It's all over
fashion.
We've
had coral, coral we call rhubarb in our collection.
Yeah.
But it's been in our line now for 3 years, and now living coral is the color of the
year. The color of the year,
yeah. So I think that for us, it's never, again, it's always about being on trend. I mean, you see there it is on that chair over there. Which was inspired by one of Nancy Lancaster's rooms in England that we got into and sketched. But that was done, you know, 2.5 years ago. So I think it's about creating stories that are timeless yet fresh.
And
saying, hey, we can do chintz in a new way that's not the chintz that we remember from the 80s, but a fresh take on it.
Yeah, and if we end up hitting on something that's a trend, that's great. But I don't think we start out trying to figure out what that trend is. I think for us, it's whether or not we would actually use the product ourselves. And if we won't use the product, then you're not going to see us make it.
Yeah, I mean, all of our bedding is Madcap Cottage bedding. I'm not going to create product. You know, I'm not a designer who's going to pull, I want to use our fabrics as much as I can. I want to use our product and our home life. Everything is kind of like, I haven't found really any good dog collars out there that last for 2 years. And I can, so there's a niche in the marketplace. So I think that for us, yes, we're always looking kind of to say, hey, what is it about? I'm looking for a kind of bedding. I can't afford these Italian bed sheets from Madison Avenue. How can I create something that feels like that, but is very accessible and very approachable, but has all those special embroidered details, the scalloping, the hand-painted floral quality, and telling that story.
Hey, I'm Trisha Yearwood, here in Hollywood at the legendary Capitol Studios. If you're in High Point for the furniture market, be sure to stop by Klausner Home Furnishings, your one-stop shopping destination for everything furniture, including Nashville, the latest addition to my Trisha Yearwood home collection. You'll find something for every room, all of it inspired by my love of home, family, and friends, and what I call a recipe for comfortable living.
Come see the entire collection at Klausner, 101 North Hamilton.
What's the lag time between the runway and the living room?
I would say it's
shorter. It's a much shorter.
It's gotten shorter, I would say. But I would say it's still about a year between when it hits on the runway and when it hits in the home. But it's definitely less time than it used to be. And I think fashion, especially now, with this whole maximalism trend is really driving trends in the home.
Is maximalism a response to the proliferation of mid-century modern? It feels like we've been living in this mid-century. I mean, every website nowadays, and I don't know whether that's just because it's easier to ship sleek product or whether that's truly driven by...
I think the mid-century modern trend came about because it was something that we hadn't had in America for so long. I mean, it was really gone for 30 years before it reappeared. But I think what the maximalism trend that we're seeing, in some ways, I think is a response to technology more than anything.
Yeah, it's kind of the new age of arts and crafts.
Because we're so inundated with technology, from our phones to, you know, everything in our life, this idea of maximalism goes back to this idea of the arts and crafts movement in a lot of ways.
And feeling special in the idea that you've brought accessories into your home that you've picked up on your travels, that you've mixed with things your kids created over the years. But that layering, I think that people want to feel layered, that it shouldn't feel like a showroom that's a mix of new and old and granny's antiques. And then if you look at kind of English country houses, they feel timeless because it's the successive generations have layered in the 1920s, 30s, 40s, 50s, layered all that stuff so it never feels dated. But I think that it's maximalism doesn't have to be, you know, a room just full of stuff. I mean, it's just, but I think it's creating a storyline that has more engagement than just kind of a beige sofa next to it. And we love using our prints and patterns on mid-century pieces because I think it tells a whole different story. Whereas if you just put beige on it, it would be, you know, nice. But I want to put a chintz on a beautiful kind of great, you know, 1950s Danish piece, and it really changes the storyline and tweaks it.
Who were your influences as you were starting your design career? Who did you look at and say, they're cool, I'd like to be like that, or...
Contemporary, or...
No, it doesn't have to...
Okay.
I don't know if there was, I mean, when I worked in editorial, I worked at House Beautiful, I worked at American Home Style, I worked at Better Homes and Gardens. So I think I was exposed to, I kind of looked at a lot of different people who I would interview over the years for things, from, you know, Charlotte Moss to Bunny Williams to Thomas O'Brien. And I think there were things about each of them that I thought, gee, that's kind of interesting, and maybe stored away in the back of my mind. But I don't think there was any one person, especially in the contemporary space, I would say Dorothy Draper, I think, because she was one of the first to really take design and
give it theater,
give it a lifestyle spin. I mean, she wrote decorating columns that were syndicated. She designed a car, she designed hotels. She was one of the first people to brand an apartment building in New York. I think she took design in a very different direction.
Yeah, I mean, Carlton Varney, who's become, you know, has been a good friend of ours for many years and ended up writing the introduction to our book, Prince Charming. So I think that, you know, a lot of things in our life come full circle. I think as a kid, for me in Tampa, Florida, we used to fly Braniff Airlines. And I'd get onto Braniff and you'd have Calder design the logo, the suns, and you get on the planes, and I think Holliston designed the clothes. And it was just this kind of whole experience. It wasn't glamorous. And I think that, you know, again, growing up having interesting experiences and had parents who were very much foodies who worked very hard, but also, you know, bringing radicchio home. And I think that growing up in environments like that where it was all about conversation, it was about kind of that salon environment at dinner and that great, you'd have, always have kind of entertaining people over who are interesting. And then layering that with, as John said, interviewing people over the years, or just picking up all the great design books of the Elsie DeWolfs or the John Fowler. You know, we're sitting in a John Fowler pink room in our conference room. Conference room doesn't have to be gray and beige. And I think that just all of those kind of experiences of being kind of just voracious readers and interested in the world, that we can have a moment of, you know, the smallest moment driving to work that can really inspire us just as much as a fancy trip to India or, you know, going
but
to
I
the mall.
Think, yeah, well, I think, you know...
The example you gave of dead geraniums at Home Depot, right?
Right. I think, you know, one of the things that really did influence me, I guess, was when we were going to London in the late 90s, and we would try to go, like, twice a year, there was a woman named Kath Kidston who... had, and I don't remember where I found out about her store, but it seemed kind of interesting because she was taking vintage product and she was repurposing it, and it was this tiny little store.
It tucked away in Holland Park called Clarendon Cross, and we really had, you know, you didn't have
smartphones back in those days. No. So I think we had the map. I think we had Lonely Planet out. And it was on there. So we finally found this little store. And she was working the cash register. And we started up a conversation with her. And a couple years later, we ended up having lunch with her. And she wanted us to open her American Outpost. And fast forward, she now has, you know, thousands of square feet on Piccadilly and 100-plus stores, I think, in Japan. And she sold the company twice. But just it was that, you know, we're magazine editors, we're really good at kind of sussing things out early and meeting them and building those relationships and then watching
But it was, you know, the business was built on vintage patterns from the 40s and 50s that she had collected, and she had turned them into wallpaper
kind
into
of hope and glory, that and, kind of, you know, that John Borman film really felt like it was.
And I think, you know, she, and it was something that was resonating largely with the British market, with Americans in a smaller way, but also she had this big international following. And I just remembered thinking that, you know, it was just kind of, it was intriguing to me that she was able to take this vintage product and reinterpret it for, you know, 2002, and it was blowing up all over the place. Like, I just found it intriguing, and I think there was something about it that it was sort of a modern day Laura Ashley, which again I think we've also brought up. And I think that idea of accessible design, but in a good way and in a different way.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, what brands do we want to emulate? You know, or what do interior designers stand for? I think that we've been pretty clear, for better or for worse, about what our USP is and where we stand, and that we are known for prints and pattern. It doesn't have to be the crazy stuff that we do at our house, but that we're creating an engaging storyline that you can embrace, but you can identify, but then reinterpret in your own way. But I think we stand for something, and I think that that's, you know, appealing for licensing companies that really understand they're the dogs. That we're not milquetoast. We're saying we're going to actually deliver something for you that's different, and it's different in the marketplace. It's different in your stable of who you currently have.
I mean, I think you have to have a point of view,
right?
And I think that's becoming even more important with the prevalence of, you know, Amazon and online shopping and all those things. If you don't have a point of view, you're not gonna make it.
Okay, so let's introduce the dogs. I'm here with Jason Oliver, Lit Nixon, and John Leckie from Madcap Cottage, and we are also here with
our 4-pound rescues.
Okay,
this is Weenie, named after Eloise at the Plazas. Little dog, and Weenie is very snorty and very entitled. They're all pound rescues. Amy Petunia is running around. She has one eye. And there's an old lady and is very sweet. There's Cecil, who we adopted last year here in North Carolina. And there's Jasper, who's a Boston boxer, who's about 9, and we adopted in upstate New York. We found him on the side of a road. So we have our little posse, and they very much inspire us. And we are so lucky to have these little guys. And we love looking at the world through their eyes. And taking road, we just came back from Charleston, where we were shooting our new Party Linens line, and they were down there with us.
Do you take them with you when you travel?
We try to.
It's a little like the circus runs and rolls into town, like, for better, you know, it's like the sideshow rolls into town. It's easier when you have access to a kitchen, perhaps, but yeah, no, we travel with them a lot.
I mean, they are, and that's...
We do a lot of road trips, and we love seeing America.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, we will be at Cracker Barrel with them. I mean, we, you know, high, low, and everything, you know, in between.
They are a big part of our lives, and everything we do for that reason has to be extremely livable, and because they can climb on the dining room furniture.
Yeah,
they
pug can, shed, and, you know, so it needs to be, the dogs are allowed on everything. And, you know, again, we grew up with, you know, grandparents who wouldn't allow us in their living rooms as kids unless it was a special occasion, and I don't know what that was. And that, you know, we don't live that way. And I think that, yeah, everything, if it doesn't pass the dog test, it doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
Well, I think that's when I look at your style, that's a really intrinsic part of your brand, is I think the word you used is livable. And that's, it doesn't feel precious.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. Like, you're not afraid to walk in the room and touch something. You feel like you could walk in put your feet up on the table
absolutely.
And relax. And just personally, that's kind of my
comfort
zone.
And I think that's,
so I relate.
Thank you.
It's interesting that you bring that up because, you know, that is the react. When people experience spaces that we've done in person, that's the reaction that we get. When they, you know, they may look at a photo and say, oh my God, that's busy or too much or whatever. But when they actually walk into the space, what you find is they actually sit down.
Yeah, I have very minimalist parents, and we have a guest bedroom that got a lot of press. It was on the cover of Susanna Salk's book, Decorate Fearlessly. And it tattered everywhere, ceiling, wallpaper, you name it. And my minimalist parents fell in love with the room, and we had to kind of kick them out. You know, they are so kind of tailored and gray and modern art, but they were in this very kind of floral room, and it so appealed to them. So I think that it's really fun to see people who said, gosh, I never really kind of appreciated the style, but now that I see how comfortable it is and livable, that I'm kind of sold, and I'm going to embrace these elements. And I think that, you know, for us at Market, having events at our home has been so important, because it's really kind of the living, breathing component of our brand, and having people able to experience the brand, because we love to entertain, but it's very much an environment. You mm-hmm. step inside and you're like, wow, I've been whisked away to another world, but it's a very livable world. And it may not be everything for you, but I think you get in our house and you say, gosh, I get it. I really can understand this. I embrace this. And it's, you know, you might live in a New York City apartment that's not that style, but you come into our home and you're like, wow, I really have an affinity for this.
So you talked a lot about the influence of history. If I could give you a time machine so you can step into the Back to the Future DeLorean and you could go back any place throughout history, any city, any era, any time, where would it be? Where would you go?
I think I'd probably go back to London in the 1930s. I very much love that mm-hmm. sensibility. And, you know, Wallace Simpson would have been doing what she was doing, and Noel Coward's, and Tallulah Bankhead was, you know, spending a lot of time coming from America and doing stage.
Well, yeah, and I think that I would probably say the same thing, and partly because that time period, like the time period we're in now, was a major change in terms of technology and in terms of
Art Deco, and
right, the world was becoming global. It wasn't so locked in, and we're in a different place now than that. In different ways, but I think there were a lot of similarities between the 30s and where we are today.
Yeah, and I think you could have access to people in a way then that you could mix and mingle.
It wasn't, right.
You know, it was stratified, but I think it was kind of anything, as Cole Porter said, anything goes. And I think that society was more malleable. It was going through a period of short, you know, skirts, dresses had shortened in the last decade, and it was a much more open society. But then, you know, with all their Art Deco influences, I think about kind of the Savoy back in the day, mm-hmm. or kind of those great supper clubs of London back in that time, and people like Alcide de Wolfe coming through, and design was changing, technology was changing, mm-hmm. architecture was changing. It was kind of intra-war, and so it was this kind of magical period in some places. And I think that would have been just a fun kind of snapshot of, you know, you look at those films. Well, I mean, you look at those films back before the Hays Code, mm-hmm. and the stuff that Mae West was saying.
Well, look at the, I mean,
they were just so kind of racy and uh-huh. wonderful. And then, well, you know, you kind of went into Joan Crawford and her, you know, after the Hays Code, it was so kind of stiff and shoulder padded.
You know, the design of movies from that period, where Thin Man, you know, the movies were becoming very important in terms of
Vogues of 1939, yeah, and those kind of
the sets and the, you know, the design elements and the things Busby that they were
Berkeley
doing
and, yeah.
with new materials that weren't,
you know, cellophane was revolutionary,
and you could dress your windows with it,
as Siri Mom did, you know, and, so. And you know, right. And so I think that, you know, I think that in our world, we don't really live in reality. We live in a kind of a made up world of, you know, it's a hodgepodge of kind of, you step into our home and you could be in India and you could be in Nantucket and you could be in, you know, Florida, and it has so many reference points. It's a little bit like Narnia. It doesn't really, our world doesn't, we kind of live in this alternate universe where it's just, you know, you could be anywhere. You could be in Thomasville, North Carolina, but you step inside and you feel like you've, or our garden was inspired by an English garden at the office. You know, that you we've kind of created a world where it's not about money, it's about fun. And it's about ordering in Chinese food and being confident. And I think that we're very confident in many ways, and we like to give that confidence. We speak at a lot of home shows. We're off to Jacksonville tomorrow to speak at the Home and Patio show, and we really love that idea that, you know, if you can get, you know, you usually get a pretty good audience, but if you get 10 people who you say, I've really made an impact, I've really kind of changed your outlook on design or entertaining or,
well, yeah, I mean,
fun.
Again, I think that that's, at the end of the day, that's, as a brand, what we really want to try and do, because you see you meet people out there doing, you know, these home shows or doing appearances for Calico Corners or whatever, and it's fascinating to see how you can change somebody's life just by introducing them to the concept of prints and pattern and what it can do for them.
A brown window treatment isn't going to do much for my life, but a little...
But you just watch their face light up and...
You paint a front door red or yellow and all of a sudden their house tells a completely different story.
Have you been speaking to my wife? She's a red door. She's a red door person. Yeah.
One of the red Once door Elizabeth Arden, always Elizabeth Arden. I loved it. We were listening to that How I Built It podcast yesterday, and we were listening to the gal who started Burt's Bees. It's very crunch, very conservationist, very good person, but very kind of earthy. And she was saying when she first heard Burt's Bees, she had a sign over her production floor, and I thought it was going to be something kind of, you know, woo-woo. And she said, "Move over, Elizabeth Arden." And I love that, because I think that that idea of kind of looking at brands of the past and what, you know, they captured a sparkle, and her name was not Elizabeth Arden, obviously. But what was it? What was some of these brands of the past that they were able to do when they were able to tell kind of magical storylines? And I think we've lost some of that.
We're going to put a sign up here, and it's going to say, "Move over who?"
I don't know.
That's a tough one, right?
Yeah, I think it's a tough one. But I think it's, I think we're always kind of dreaming bigger. And, you know, I think that right now we're really inspired by Crazy Rich Asians and reading that trilogy. And the, you know, obviously there's some parody in there. And it's, but that idea of Singapore and the access and the global qualities that those folks have, and obviously it's a lot of money, but just that glamour and that excitement and the a whole other slice of the pie. Yeah, and I think that, you know, the 1930s really appealed. I mean, so we did a party a couple of years ago. It was Shanghai 1930s. So I think the 30s appealed to us in many ways globally. I mean, because I think that we did a party here at the Country Club for New Year's, and we turned, one room was a big band orchestra, and we hung a zillion Chinese lanterns, and we turned the hallway into a street food, so we had vendors, and we had dragons, and I was DJing in the ladies' card room, and you came to the party, and I was the general manager of the Pooley Hotel on the Bund, and John was the whatever, and we, you know, everybody who came to the party, 500 people came to the party, we introduced them and situated them, and you know, we spent $1,000, but we transformed the space into something that you felt like, wow, I've been whisked away to Shanghai 1936. And we love the idea of capturing and telling stories. I'm kind of off on a tangent here, but that idea of you know, give the lady, you know, what, kind of paraphrasing Marshall Field, give the lady what she doesn't know she wants. And creating, you know, retail spaces that feel engaging and experiential, and creating environments and creating product. And as our brand hopefully grows, you know, every day you're like, you know, is a gerbil wheel still running? Let's hope it is. But if it, you know, if it continues to expand, to really engage that and enlarge that footprint, and to continue to tell a story that is fun and livable, rooted in history, but thinks differently.
Okay, so last question.
Yes.
You said you liked the 1930s because you saw the parallels to today and the times of great change. So what do we look like on the other side of this change? I mean, if you look at the impact of, you know, everybody calls it the Amazon effect. If you look at the change of technology on people's lives, if you look at the maximalist trend, I want to look forward 5 years, 10 years, whatever period, what do we look like on the other side? And what does the home look like on the other side? If you were going to say, all right, you're Isaac Asimov of the design world, what does that home look like tomorrow?
Good question, Bill. I wish I had.
Well, I think you're always, I think technology is not going to go away. It's always going to be a part of the experience going forward. But I think you are going to see a return to experiences that aren't driven solely by technology. And by that, I mean, like, you know, you can, a brick and mortar retail store is not going to go away, but it and you're seeing it happen, it's going to evolve into more of an experience, and it's not going to be just a staid showroom floor where
it has a cafe, you know, like look at Terrain from Urban, you know, from Anthropology, where it's a cafe, a restaurant, and home product.
It's an experience.
It's an experience. And you can go in there and say, wow, I didn't really think I was a gardener, but now I'm certainly impressed. I think gardening is going to have a big resurgence because I think, to your point about technology, I think that people really want to get back into the outdoors and celebrate and create those unique experiences. I don't think gardening has really been tapped in America like it has in England and some other places. But I think, you know, I love technology where it's gone, that I can think back 10 years where I would always have to hardwire my clients' homes with stereo systems and you know, dimmer switches, and it was, you know, electronic, and you go into a hotel room and you didn't know which button to hit, and you'd think you were turning on the lights and the blinds would go up, and it was technology where it didn't make sense. And so, you know, for us, I love having Sonos, and I love Nest, and I love smart bulbs, so I don't have to go put in dimmer switches. And I love some of those kind of things, because I think that's intuitive technology, where I think that we were on a trend for a while where it was just kind of technology for technology's sake. But I think we're going to continue in some of these arts and crafts things where people are going to want to not feel cookie cutter, and you know.
I think bespoke or more special, like the ability to, whether or not it really is, but you give someone the ability to take a chair and personalize it for them, whether it's by just choosing the fabric that goes on it or being able to do some other little tweaks to it. I think you really are getting to a place where people because of technology, you're able to customize things more.
And you're able to do it quickly. We've been able to do it for years with Nike and Vans and those kind of things. But now you can create furniture and have it delivered in 8 weeks. We just launched a line of ranges with Blue Star.
I saw that at K-Biz.
Yeah, at K-Biz, and you can use any, and we used our patterns, which are in the line, but you can do any pattern you want, and that range will be at your door in 8 weeks. And that's faster than I can get fabrics. And so I think that, you know, luxury is, you know, how can you speed up that process so that they have it sooner? And I think it's been amazing to watch that technology. And if you can't play in that space, you're not going to make it. And so how can we create that quality? And companies like The Inside, where they have 100-plus fabrics available on Made in America pieces. You know, all of our fabrics are made in America, and I love that we can still come in at a price, still print it at Swan Dyeing in Fall River, Massachusetts. I love that. And I think that, yeah, I think we're going to see more and more, but I think we're so global in our perspective. What's the, you know, the ICAT is the new Otani is the new whatever, and I think just this wonderful global experience in your home where you're going to be cooking global, you're going to be living very globally, but in a way that feels very personal to you. And you know, I think it's, no, we're not going to be as much lemmings of it on a trend of succulent plants or whatever that might be, but much more of a, you have the education now and you can create your own opportunities, own brand experiences in your home. You know, when I was a kid, we used to watch Jane Fonda do her exercise. My mom and I wouldn't do it. We just sit there and eat. I look at Martha Stewart every morning on her blog, and I love Martha, but I can't do. You know, she has a team of 800 people, but I think you can kind of extrapolate from that and create your own experiences.
Yeah, I'd be embarrassed to admit I sat eating bonbons watching Jane Fonda work out. But
there you go. Same potato chips, popcorn.
I didn't really eat bonbons. It was probably potato chips or Entenmann's donuts.
I was exhausted at the end of it.
That's it. Give me another donut.
Totally.
Thank you both so much for taking the time.
Oh, Bill, what a pleasure. Thanks for having us.
It was a blast.
Yeah, this is great.
Well, we'll have to come back and circle back as this starts to evolve and you're doing activations, and you know, we'll come back. Maybe we'll bring some video.
You know what our sign says? Our sign says move over cash flow.
Okay, there's your sign. All right, on that note, right there.